Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Our purpose is to support and encourage the arts of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Singer-songwriter Hiram Ring now calls Lancaster, Pennsylvania home, but seems to spend most of his time traveling to distant places, both domestic and abroad. I met up with Hiram in February of 2010 for a chat about his 2009 CD, Breathe Deep, and his thoughts on social media as a tool for musicians to stay connected with fans and friends. You can find out more about Hiram at his website, hiramring.com. That's HIRAMRING.com. So joining me in the wood stove house is Hiram Ring. Thanks for being here.
It's really great to be here.
We've got a lot of different creative things to talk about. Let's start with for anybody who's listening to this that hasn't heard your music or mm-hmm. isn't from the Lancaster area, why don't you just give us a little bit of a bio of your musical adventures?
All right. Well, I started playing music when I was 16 in Ghana in West Africa. That's kind of where I grew up, and my parents moved to Lancaster in 2001. So since the beginning of college, this is where I call home, and graduated in 2005 and started playing open mics in the local area, and one thing led to another, and most recently I've been traveling around the U.S., promoting the latest album and playing at a lot of different places and really just having a ball.
You've made quite a name for yourself in this area in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah.
Did you go to college in Lancaster?
I went to college in upstate New York, about 5 hours away.
So really, since 2005, playing a lot in this area, I would assume, right?
Yeah, I was home for the summers, but basically since 2005 is when I was playing.
You mentioned the new record, the latest record, Breathe Deep, mm-hmm.
yeah.
Has been out for a little while, and I followed your tour
mm-hmm.
through the internet, the social media outlets. We'll talk about that in just a minute, but
yeah.
Tell us about the record.
Well, it took about a year to put together. I had started out working on a full-length album with a friend that turned into a 4-song EP. And then he had to get out of music for a while, and so I picked up where we left off and started recording my own music, and that's what turned into 12 songs, Breathe Deep.
Was the EP part of? Are those songs part of Breathe Deep, or did you start? Did you start over? But you're just
I kind of started over. The one song that did transfer from that first was Go From Here, which is the opening track of the album. And I had done it, and I just wanted to do it slightly differently, and I really liked it, and that was kind of the song that people were responding to when I would play at open mics and stuff and say, hey, can I get a copy of that song somewhere? So, and that was actually, I gave my EP to Helen Light at XPN when they first moved into the Lancaster area.
You're right.
And that was the song that they picked to play on XPN.
Seems we all have our path to travel. Watch the captain sail the moonship through the starry seas. I don't know where I go from here. There's a feeling in me, it's not very clear. Life is changing like the light is fading fast, but I know that you are here.
This is one where, basically for this album, I recorded 12 tracks of just me and a guitar. And I took the best, I tracked vocals and guitar at the same time, and I just kind of added all the other instruments in.
How many other musicians played on this?
Oh man, like 9.
A lot.
Yeah, 9 different, I think.
Who are some of the players?
Playing, I got my sister to play violin. My friend Hannah plays the accordion. Matt Monticchio plays all the pianos and stuff on this. My friend Mike Bitz plays upright bass. And then I think on this one, David Green is playing upright. See, I get confused because there's so many musicians that I'm interacting with on a daily basis. Like, so who I play live with is not necessarily who I play with on the album.
Right. And then recording other people.
Right. Nah. Exactly. Fading fast, but I know that you are here. Yes, I know that you are here and you're very near. And it was really fun being the engineer and having an idea of the form of the songs and being able to say, to like work with people on them.
Yeah,
so they
yeah.
come and they play a part. I'm not an arranger. I don't even know how to write music. You know, I just create it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I play it by ear. And so the musicians that I had play are also people that play by ear. And so it was like they'd play along with it. I'd give them the chords. And then we would have this creative energy where I'd say, okay, this is cool, you know, do that. Or here's a specific line that you can do. You know, like right here you have the bass and the strings kind of playing off of each other.
So you were really orchestrating.
Yeah.
But
kind of on the spot. I wasn't like creating the or writing out the orchestra pieces for people to play.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like they'd play and then I'd tell them, oh, this is good or that's not good. Or
how much of it was a sense of, all right, let's throw it against the wall and then that's a baseline and then we'll see what sticks versus you sort of hearing parts and then directing them into the part?
Yeah, it was a little bit of both.
Okay. Age-old question, do you write music first or do you write lyrics first?
Music first, generally. Sit down with the guitar, find a melody line, find a chord progression.
Yeah.
Those seem to be my best songs.
How much of the music that you do, your original music, is Christian, would be considered Christian music, mm-hmm. versus secular music, or is there a differentiation?
I feel like the music that I create comes from who I am as a person, and my spirituality is a large part of that.
Sure.
I don't know that unless I'm creating for specifically church situations, I would call it Christian music. You know, I think the spirituality comes out in what I write, but I write about life as it happens.
You've had success with the getting played on Christian radio,
right?
And participating in you know Christian shows and things of that nature,
right?
And so, you know that.
Yeah.
How does that work as far as because there's always been a genre,
right?
And then there have always been these bands that have sort of crossed over, U2 probably being the biggest example of a band that really sang about and interwoven,
right,
Bono's own Christianity into lyrics, particularly early on.
Right.
Yet they were never considered a Christian band,
right,
but very much a part of that. So how has that worked for you, either in a good way, a bad way, or in an indifferent way?
Well, I think It's allowed me to go places that I wouldn't otherwise have gone. It's allowed me to create music or to play my music in environments that that Christians don't necessarily go to. So in that sense, I think it's opened some doors. And I think what people really respond to is how real you are as a person. Not just about your spirituality, but about all of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was having a conversation last night with a friend of mine, and we were talking about faith and God, and he said, "Do you ever question your faith?" And I said, "Yeah, every day." You know, that's what faith is. It's a journey. It's a big question mark, and then at the end of the day, you have hope. And I think that's what I really want to bring home to people in the music that I create, is that there is hope, you know, and without hope, you're just tossed about by the storm.
journey to reach the great waters where I've never been.
Breathe Deep as a record is a journey.
Right.
The last song is called I'm on a Journey.
Right.
Why? Why is that on this record, and why is it the last song?
Well, the whole album kind of goes through my life from the beginning, where I really don't know what's going on, you know, through the whole middle section is about love, and then reaching the end and realizing all of life is this journey that we're on. And I wanted to end with it because it's really where I'm at, you know, and it's a good song to end with.
So does it leave room for a sequel?
I hope so. I'm planning one. So
you know how movies, the certain movie ends and you say, well, they're getting that ready for a sequel.
Yeah.
If you end a record with I'm on a Journey, I think it sets the stage.
Yeah.
But in another sense,
it's kind of like, okay, this is where things are left. My journey's end. I'm in the unknown, but I know I am never without a true friend.
The journey that you went on last year,
uh-huh,
in support of Breathe Deep, right after it came out,
yeah,
was really where I got to know you from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I was able to do that was through the internet, through your blog,
yeah,
and the video blogs that you posted,
yeah,
practically every day.
Yeah, I try to do it every day.
I thought it was a wonderful use of social media and tools that were really, I know this is going to sound strange, but
uh-huh,
12 months ago, really only emerging.
Yeah.
And such a critical part of everybody's life,
right,
or so many people's lives today. So I thought that was just a really creative use of the tools, video blogging,
yeah,
back then. And one of my favorite entries was at Stone Mountain in Georgia.
Okay, yeah.
I thought that was, I think about that.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, that particular video and
the laser show.
The laser show on the wall. Yeah, the rock wall.
Yeah, and that wouldn't have been possible really if the technology wasn't there. You know,
I had
this little video camera, flip video, and somehow the light sensor was able to capture the laser show at night. You know, it's pitch black, and yet there's enough light to actually capture what's going on the mountain.
And then upload it to a website and have me
exactly
sitting in a office somewhere with a few minutes to, you know,
yeah,
to kill, and I fire up and watch it. And that's really the amazing part.
Yeah.
So where did the idea come from? How did that come about? To video blog, was it intentional or did it just happen?
Well, I had some friends who were like, well, you know, are you going to keep us updated on what you're doing? And I had heard about video blogging as kind of the new wave, and I thought, well, yeah, I wonder if the technology is there for me to invest in to be able to take snapshots, you know, daily of what I'm doing and putting it up online. And so it was really my friends saying, you know, can I come along with you? I was like, well, I don't have enough room in my car, you know, but maybe if I take some video, then you can come along with me.
Some of the shots from your car were memorable.
Yeah.
driving down the highway thinking, man, he really should be,
yeah,
shouldn't be running, operating a video camera right now. I also remember a scene. It must have been a day or two. The names, I'm not going to remember anything,
yeah,
but you were at a friend's house somewhere in Virginia, and I think he did this a couple of times, but I just remember it being sort of out in the woods, and there was some log chopping going on.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like such a relaxing, peaceful time.
Right. I think that was the time when I pulled my back and when I was chopping that wood. Speaking of, you know, wood for your wood stove.
Right.
But yeah, I think the way that I had set it up, I basically got in touch with people that I knew. I kind of picked out the states that I wanted to go visit, figured out what weeks I would be there, and then got in touch with people and said, hey, could you host me for a certain period of time? Mm-hmm. I'm playing a show nearby. You know, I generally book these shows, or do they know of a place where I could book a show? So it was basically through social networks, you know, through people that I knew in these different areas, who I could then stay with. So I'd get to visit friends, and then play shows and have a good time. And I had it spaced out, so I was only playing about 3 shows a week. So I had some downtime, and my main focus was I have to find something to video every day.
Well, there were some educational videos in there, too.
Good.
I remember some museums and some things like that, where you'd make stuff.
Yeah, I was always trying to find something to do.
What was your path? What was your tour path? I mean, for the folks listening here.
I started here in Lancaster, and I went down to Maryland, Virginia, and then North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida. Went over through Tennessee, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Oklahoma.
I don't think I realized that you went that far out west.
Yeah, I was in Tulsa, was probably about as far west as I got, and then up through Kansas City, Illinois, and then Ohio.
It was about 2.5 months, right?
Yeah.
Total.
Yep, 2.5, 3 months.
That's fantastic. What a great opportunity to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Do you have any plans to go back out and do another one of those road trips?
I'm considering it, but I really feel like I need to get this next album finished, and I have some downtime right now. I'm actually considering maybe going overseas for a while, going back kind of where I grew up.
And touring through, or just for the purpose of touring?
I have some friends in England and Germany that would like to set some shows up for me, but I'm thinking of maybe next year getting over to Asia.
Oh, wow.
Full time for probably about a year or two. So,
where do you see? I know you're very active in social media. Mm-hmm. How do you see it today? I mean, it's such a fluid thing, but I always like to hear from other musicians and other performers and people who are sort of out there using social media in some extent as a marketing tool.
Yeah.
Instead of just updating people on their, you know, what they're doing at the moment. Where do you see social media and how it fits into the music marketing side? And is that your primary purpose for it?
Yeah, I think I'm still trying to figure out exactly how to use it to the fullest extent. But as far as marketing, it's basically a really easy way to let people know what you're doing, to keep them updated. I'm finding that you really need to be specific and targeted about how you use it. And you have to provide people something real on the other end. It's great for events. It's great for letting people know about an upcoming album, or if you have some music that you can get people to listen to.
Do you like it?
Well, I don't know. I really like connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as long as I can use it to actually connect with people, that's really going to be its strength. But if at the end of the day it's just another thing to do, you know, to get your music out there, then it's really, maybe it's not really worth that much.
This is Around the Wood Stove. I'm talking to Lancaster singer-songwriter Hiram Ring about his music, his travels, and how to stay connected using social media.
Now, Now, I use something called TweetDeck, which is basically a Twitter client.
Yeah, yeah, but I use TweetDeck for Twitter.
But they've now integrated Facebook and MySpace to TweetDeck as well. So you can choose, you know, which one you send it to.
Yeah, it may have gotten better, but the first version of TweetDeck that I used, my problem with it was that I was reading Facebook updates as a column in TweetDeck,
right?
But I couldn't. It didn't respect the people that I hid in Facebook.
Oh, right.
And there was a reason why I hid certain people,
right? Because you didn't want to know what they were doing.
And it's right. Some people just post constantly about things that aren't necessarily relevant. And it's not that I didn't want to be connected with them.
Right.
And it's not that I didn't want to have a Facebook relationship with them, but I didn't need
to
hear.
That's funny. Facebook relationship. We now have to qualify how we're related to people. Oh, do you know this person? Oh, yeah, on Facebook.
On Facebook, I do. Isn't that true, though? Aren't there...
Yeah,
there's a difference.
It's true.
A Facebook relationship is different from a real, meaning human-to-human relationship, which is different from a Twitter-following relationship.
Right.
Which is different from being connected on LinkedIn.
That we now have all these different categories that we put people in. You know, and we would do that, you know, whether or not, you know, any of this stuff existed.
Of course, right, because you always had friends who were your friends and then friends who were your, school friends.
Yeah.
And your your acquaintances.
I've got over 1,200 friends on Facebook. And how many of them do I actually interact with? Maybe a handful, you know.
Do you hide them?
No.
So everybody's in your...
Yeah.
Everybody's in your newsfeed.
Yeah.
That's a lot of stuff.
But actually, what's really cool about that is that people that I know in college, for example, I can read up about what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? And then I don't always check everyone's Facebook status, you know. But if I see it in the feed and I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, I'll comment on it, you know. And so there is some level of relationship that's beyond just kind of acquaintance.
I agree. I don't, when I ask if you hid, it's just that there's, you know.
Yeah, there are some.
There's a certain person or type of relationship, I guess, that, you know, it's there for a reason.
Yeah.
Maybe old classmates or something like that, that, you know. For me, it was also the applications.
Right.
The people who are sending the little gifts and all those sorts of things. And you'd see 12 or 15 updates right in a row.
Yeah.
I'm starting to sound like a crotchety, I'm a real meanie.
Yeah.
I'm starting.
Well, there is Facebook etiquette.
Yes.
Just like there's telephone etiquette, you know, just like there's texting etiquette.
Absolutely.
You know, there's ways of handling yourself socially that I think for a lot of people are still being worked out.
Or you're going to get hid.
Right, exactly.
And then what?
What I find really difficult to deal with is kind of the rate at which everything happens. And I feel like, to some degree, since I was posting every single day for about 78 days or 68 days on this road trip, my interactivity with the web has really dropped, you know, percentage-wise.
Oh, sure. Well, if you're doing it every day.
Right. And now I do it maybe once a week. And I wonder if, since I'm not keeping up that pace, are people still really interested?
That's a good question.
And so that's, I feel like there's a lot of pressure to kind of continue to perform at the same level and higher in terms of social media. And I think that's why I see a lot fewer people now interacting on Facebook or MySpace, because they just can't keep up that level of interactive.
So you think that as a whole, that it's since last year, because Facebook really exploded in
last
the spring
year.
Of last year, and Twitter did as well.
Yeah.
I did some research for my work. Mm-hmm. On the number of Twitter accounts that were created between January of 2009 and June of 2000. Astronomical. It was it was doubling. I don't remember the numbers, but it was something crazy, doubling every week or something.
Right.
It was just insane.
Yeah, and I was getting probably 10 or 12 follow requests, you know, a day that would come into my inbox. And now I get maybe like 2 or 3 a week.
I don't know if you remember, based on your history, mp3.com.
I do.
Yeah, that was I remember becoming part of mp3.com probably around 99.
Okay.
And it was the first place where you could actually host music.
Right.
I mean, it was the first. I had my own website at the time, but there was no way I had even enough space.
Right.
With my hosting plan, and right. I paid 5 times more.
And you
than
needed
I paid
a now. Flash player or something, and Flash wasn't even around.
Right. Right. So there was really no way you would. I remember we had links to little RM, little Real Media files.
Okay.
But when you clicked it, you couldn't play it. It would just download.
Right.
And then someone could play it on a Real player, and it was really crappy.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah, like 64K or something.
Yeah, it was terrible. Because that was all the web space you had. But I remember a friend of mine emailing me one day, someone who I'd met out in the sort of internet music community. Mm-hmm. And he said, do you have a MySpace profile? And this was probably, I don't know, like 2002 maybe.
Yeah.
And he said, it's the new mp3.com.
Yeah.
Everybody that that we knew on this website is now there.
Yeah.
You need to get a move on.
Yeah.
And I hopped over and, you know, because my mp3.com got bought or became something else.
Right.
I remember getting that email too, them saying, sorry, all your music's going to go away.
Right.
But yeah, and it was really a music thing mm-hmm. at first. It was a way to host.
Yeah. And I think it still is.
Yeah, primarily.
I mean, it's like a calling card. You know, if you have something on MySpace that I can listen to easily, mm-hmm. you know, I just type in the URL and I'm there, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone's familiar with the layout, and so it's easy to navigate in that sense.
Yeah.
But there are some pretty bad MySpace, you know, sites out there. And I think that's probably why a lot of people just avoid it.
Yeah, the custom theme, flashing, sparkling hearts and things like that.
Get a little sketchy.
Yeah. Makes it a little difficult to...
interact with.
So Breathe Deep was recorded in the Ring Records studio.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what that means exactly, but basically means I have some mics and I have a computer and
isn't that interface today that's pretty much all you need.
Yeah. Yep. And a good set of ears, that helps.
You're actually recording other projects, not just your own music in the studio.
Yep. I helped my friend Katie Becker mm-hmm. record hers. She has an EP up on iTunes, and I work with Matt Monticchio and David Green. We put out 2 Christmas albums. And I recorded a guy named Josie Shago. He released a 2-song demo. And he calls himself Of Wales, actually. That's the band name. So if you look it up on MySpace.
Of Wales.
Of Wales. And then, who else have I recorded? I've recorded some demos. I recorded a guy in Norway when I was there for 3 months.
Oh, so that wasn't in the same physical, obviously, location. So you just took everything.
I had my computer, and I had an M-Box, and I had a nice vocal mic. And he plays piano, so we could go direct from his keyboard. And that was when I was mixing this album, actually, in 2008. I was over there in the spring.
Thanks very much for sitting down and talking about this stuff. This has been great. And best of luck on the journey.
Thanks.
Wherever it may take you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jason.
You bet.
I really appreciate it.
Around the Wood Stove is a production of the Wood Stove House with inspiration from the creative works of Lancaster. Our theme song is the old-time traditional tune, Buck Dancer's Choice, performed by Jeff Sims and myself, Jason Mundock. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com.
You're going to make me sound like a chipmunk, aren't you?